Hello and welcome into the first Flyer Buzz podcast of 2018 here on Flyers Radio 24/7 and the Flyers Blueberry page. Our podcast is coming up there as well. Of course, we thank you very much for joining us, no matter how you might be listening to us today here on the Flyer Buzz podcast. I'm Brian Smith, joined in person today by Bill Meltzer for the first episode of the year. Bill, welcome, and we trust your holidays were good.
They were fantastic. Hope yours were too.
So the Flyers have hit the halfway point now of the season as we are currently in the bye week and just about getting ready to get back going again with the Flyers taking on the New Jersey Devils and the New York Rangers in their next two. Finally getting into some Metropolitan Division games here after the most of the season has been played outside of the division so far, and we'll touch on that in just a moment. But first we're going to kind of look back at the first half of this season and recap it a little bit, for lack of a better term. The Flyers are going into this bye week right there in the thick of a playoff race, and the Metropolitan Division is a little bit ridiculous right now. Flyers technically are tied for last in it, but it's only 3 or 4 points into a playoff spot from that point, and they have a lot of opportunities here to make up points in the second half, but I don't know what you would look at, perhaps, Bill, as some of the surprises. Standouts from the first half of the season. Obviously, Claude Giroux's performance, I would imagine, one of them. The winning streak this team went on was decent, but unfortunately it followed a long winless streak, so it certainly has been an interesting first half.
Absolutely. I think that the most pleasant, I don't even want to call it a surprise, because there were always hints before that Sean Couturier could, you know, play at a high level offensively. You know, you look last year, 17 points in the final 19 games. Year before that, you know, he had a shoulder injury, but at the point he had the shoulder injury, he had 15 points in 15 games. So there were always hints, and that was even before he was on the top line. But I don't think anybody would have expected, you know, him to be on almost a 50-goal pace at the midway point here. That's a very pleasant surprise. You know, and I think that there have been the bounce-back year that Shane Gostisbehere's Bears had. Again, not a surprise technically, but it's still a very pleasant development for the team. You know, for the Flyers to be in control of their own destiny here, if they don't even, you know, you're always going to watch the scoreboard, but if the Flyers take care of their own business in the second half here, they'll be in.
When you look back at how the first half of this season developed, I think the first thing the Flyers were looking for was a strong start, and they got that, a much better start than they've had in past years. And then they went through that stretch there for about 2 or 3 weeks where they kept finding themselves in a variety of frustrating situations. There was the late offsides challenge in the game against Nashville that possibly cost the Flyers a point, maybe two, depending on how things went in overtime. You know, there was a sense there after the first 3 weeks or so that maybe the Flyers deserved to have about 6 more points than they actually did, but they were able to still fight through that for a decent start.
Yeah, the game in Ottawa as well, where Couturier scored what should have been the game-tying goal in the final minute, and the referee lost sight of the puck, even though it was moving the whole time, and there was ample evidence to allow that goal, but it wasn't. There was at least a point the Flyers lost in that game, too. You know, the Flyers won 3 of the first 4 at home. You know, they had that 5-game homestand just to start their home stretch. You know, they were, the last 3 years, they were, 52 to 55 points every year. So you start out 3 and 4 at home, or win 3 or 4 at home, rather. You know, and you look to be in good shape. Now, the Flyers had kind of an ugly loss in the final game of that homestand, and then that November stretch. So those were some games in there that got away. And really, that's why the Flyers find themselves in the position now that they are, where they're in a dogfight. You know, if the Flyers would have navigated that stretch a little bit better, not just the games that slipped away, but some games are really, you know, weren't very good games. You know, the game against San Jose, the game home game against Boston. You know, those are games you look back at where they maybe could have competed a little better in those. Those to me are more galling than the games where, you know, you're right there and just something happens, you lose a point. Huge credit to the team for sticking with it and for staying together, because, you know, we've all seen teams go through bad stretches and then just the bottom drops out. You know, guys start pointing fingers. You know, the level of speculation that goes on starts to filter into the dressing room. It just can become a very negative environment, and that didn't happen. You know, the Flyers went out to Western Canada. They swept that, came home, won 4 of 5 in that homestand. And, you know, since then, I mean, even when there's been some adversity, they've bounced right back. So it's, you know, it's been all in all, you know, a decent first half. Could have been better, but they're not in bad shape.
And I almost feel like since the start of this win, the six-game win streak, is that body of work there is more typical of what this Flyers team actually is. You know, they had the six-game winning streak, came back off of that, lost 3 in a row. And again, I think you saw a situation there where this team, for whatever reason, if they have more than, I don't know, 2 or 3 days off, they lose kind of their timing a little bit, lose their edge. They come out sluggish in the first game back. And you certainly saw that during the holidays there. I mean, we're in the middle here of are almost wrapped up a stretch of 20 days where the Flyers only played 6 times. But when they came back out at home for the homestand, they had the first game against Pittsburgh that did not go well. Again, coming off of a bit of a lull there, a 4-day break. And then kind of went into the last 3 games of that homestand, almost lights out, you know, stumbled a little bit in the last game. But they, you know, certainly, I think we're more consistent in those 3 games, and that's been the big word that they've been looking for, is the consistency. And, you know, I think that's more of an indicator, I think, of what you might see from this team down the home stretch where these breaks are fewer and far between.
Absolutely. And, you know, I mean, the Flyers, basically the whole Metro Division, there are exceptions, you know, Carolina being an exception. But there are teams that basically most of the Metro's on bye this week, so – you know, the Flyers come out of it, and the Devils will be kind of in the same boat here a little bit. So the Flyers absolutely have to come out of this stretch, you know, playing the way they were heading into it. And that, and you're absolutely right that that's been a problem in recent years. That's one of the first things to, you know, it's one of the first things to look at. I think that, you know, on the other hand, there's a chance to hit the reset button with some things that need to get a little bit better, like the penalty kill. You know, the penalty kill is kind of staggered into the bye week here. You know, people kind of forget. It's easy to forget looking at the numbers overall. But the Flyers, until that game in Calgary in the middle of November, were on a really good stretch on the penalty kill. It was over 80%. Mm-hmm. You know, they were on a 14-for-15 stretch there, and then the bottom dropped out. And it's really kind of been a struggle to get back to equilibrium. You know, of course, on the positive side, they haven't been taking very many penalties at all lately. That's been a definite positive. So, you know, I think there are areas that were going well. Like the power play was kind of surging heading into the break. They're gonna have to hit the reset button a little bit on that. But I think it's also an opportunity for some maybe the younger guys as you go into the second half. Maybe Nolan Patrick, particularly, maybe take a little bit bigger bite.
Couple of takeaways I had from the last game against Buffalo before the break, and then we'll move on to some of the other things within the division. But the one thing that I've felt watching this team over the past several years is that they might be a little bit hesitant to change their approach when things start cooling off a little bit. And what I'm getting at there is I feel like in this day and age, video scouting is all over the place. Everybody can see what you're doing. And, you know, it seemed to me that when the Flyers would change something and it would go well, and maybe 5 games into that, other teams start picking up on that and start defending it better, and there was a little bit of a slow reaction to that. In the Buffalo game, I saw the exact opposite, which was encouraging to me, in that the first power play in that game, the Flyers were using a power play formation, if you will. I don't know exactly how to describe it, but I do know that it was one formation in that power play, and then in the second period they come out on another power play, and they looked completely different. They were basically running a different play, which is the first time I've noticed that in a while, and they were able to score on that one. And it really seemed like Buffalo was expecting the setup they saw in the first period, and in the second period were given something completely different to deal with, and it was successful. And I was just curious if you'd noticed anything like that with this team over the last few weeks, and you know, if that's something that's more prevalent around the league maybe than I'm aware of, that other teams are running multiple sets or multiple whatevers to try and fool an opponent.
And there were hints of that. You know, early the season, the Flyers were using a little bit of that formation that we saw in the second period, and they were setting up more plays from behind the net. You know, when we think of the Flyers' power play, it you know, the first thing you think of is Claude Giroux setting up in the left half wall, you know, mm-hmm. and they're moving guys around a little bit more.
And in past years, Braden Schenn would stand in the slot and they'd try to find him in front, and just was the same thing all year, I felt.
Absolutely. And, you know, but when it's working, because the Flyers, you know, most years were over 20%, you know, a lot of times, at least historically, the best power plays haven't necessarily been the unpredictable ones. You know, they dare you to stop them.
See Alex Ovechkin in the
right
circle,
exactly.
Right?
Well, yep. Exactly. Well, exactly.
For 12 years.
Yeah. I mean, everybody knows where Ovechkin's going to set up, and they'll just feed him for one-timers.
Yeah.
But good luck stopping him.
Right, exactly.
But yeah, but I agree with you. There's so much pre-scouting that goes on, you know, and I think that you do have to be able to throw some other looks. You know, the second power play unit, let's be honest, is a work in progress, but you know, the Flyers have changed the look there too, because they were going four forwards, one D all season.
Right.
More recently, they've gone three forwards and two defensemen. So, yeah, there are definitely tweaks there.
And then the other thing that was a takeaway for me was in the post game show, I was talking with Travis Konecny, and again, we've got a week long break coming up here, and then the past, even going back as far as 5 years ago, I think the Flyers have played great going into a break in the schedule, whether it was for Olympics or whatever, and then they come out of that break and it's just all gone. And I asked Travis, I said, how do you guys kind of bottle this and make sure it's there when you come back on Saturday? And he said, his response was interesting. He said he didn't think they needed to bottle it, because now that they've had a taste of it, that they know what it feels like and they know what they need to do to get there, so he doesn't think it'll be a problem. And it kind of made me, you know, it kind of went along with something else that I noticed a little bit, is that during the Flyers' six-game winning streak, I felt that was a streak where obviously the execution was there. Execution was great, but the bounces were there too. This last three-game streak, to me, has felt more like the Flyers have come out and kind of grabbed the other team by the throat, if you will, at the beginning of the game. Now, that didn't happen against Buffalo, but the two previous games are the ones where I saw that, and it kind of, to me, came off of they were so angry at themselves after the Pittsburgh game and the showing that they had on their home ice against their biggest rival, that they came out against against the Islanders and just said, enough of this, and took control of the game, controlled it the whole way out, did it against St. Louis, a little tougher against Buffalo in the second half of a back-to-back, but they made it work. And to me, I'm looking at this and thinking, is this a turning point for this team? Did they figure something out here that they can use for the rest of the season?
Oh, hopefully. And quick starts, obviously, are huge. When you look at the statistically in the NHL, you know, it's not quite what it was a couple of years ago, but still, the team that scores first most of the time is going to win. You know, and the Flyers didn't really have a lot of games until very recently where they would be leading after the first period they would score first, but they wouldn't necessarily come out of the first period with the lead. So to shorten the game to 40 minutes playing from ahead instead of a dogfight or even worse chasing the game, absolutely. That's absolutely a key of the second half, no doubt.
So at the break, Flyers with 46 points, 19-15-8, tied with two other teams, Carolina and the New York Islanders. And 1 point behind Pittsburgh, who's in the final playoff spot right now, three back of the Rangers. Flyers have two games in hand on Pittsburgh. They have one game in hand on the Islanders. They played the same number of games as Carolina and the Rangers. So that's kind of the situation right now. And it is kind of crazy what's going on in this Metropolitan Division this year. While we were on our break over the holidays, there was one particular night I noticed. The Flyers had an extra night off after Christmas, and it was the league's first night back. I guess that would have been the 27th. Flyers were off. Other seven teams in the division all played, and all seven of them got at least a point. There were four of them playing each other. They both went to extra time, so there was 2 points given out to two of those teams and 1 point to the other two. And then the other three teams were playing outside the division, and they all won. And it was absolutely the worst-case scenario if you were the Flyers sitting there in St. Louis getting ready for the game the next night and to watch that happen. And that sort of thing just keeps on seeming to happen in this division. So it's you know, a lot of times you talk about taking care of the business, Bill, which obviously the Flyers will try to do, but it's just a little maddening sometimes to watch all these other Metro Division teams go to overtime against each other and rack up these points.
All those, you know, 3-point games are a big part of the reason why it's so hard to, you know, if you're playing catch up in the standings, because you need regulation decisions. You know, and the regulation losses, of course, are what ultimately will sink a team sometimes. It's, I mean, if there was any silver lining to the Flyers, you know, 10-game winless streak, is that they at least got 5 points out of there. Because if,
right,
you know, that's, if it would have been regulation losses, then, you know, I might have been too much to come back from.
No, absolutely, absolutely.
And, you know, listen, I mean, if things are so tightly packed, maybe not necessarily from Washington to the bottom, but from, you know, from the third spot where the Devils are right now. If the Flyers win this game in regulation, all of a sudden you're 4 points behind the Devils, and you know it's something where it's just tightly packed. You can't go on any losing streaks here. Sometimes if you're playing outside the division, you can have a little soft spell there, but it's get a little bit of help. But now the nights when you're going to be losing, you know, the other teams are going to be gaining, so it's it's critical.
And that, to a larger point, is kind of maybe one of the benefits, if you will, of the Flyers' schedule the rest of the way here. We've got 40 games left. The Flyers, going into the break, have played 8 games against teams in the Metropolitan Division. That is out of a total of 28 that they'll play in a given year. You play every team now in your division 4 times. There's 7 other teams. So the Flyers have 20 games remaining against teams in their division. And that's critical, because that's 20 opportunities to take points away from the other teams in your division. What we've seen a lot of times over the course of the last few years is that in the back half of the season, Flyers go on a bit of a tear, but they're playing Atlantic Division teams, they're playing Western Conference teams, and the 2 points that they earn are offset by one of these other silly games over here where the Rangers play the Devils and it goes to overtime and every team gets a point. And it's hard to catch up that way. This year, they've got the opportunity to kind of control their own destiny, as you mentioned earlier, by playing these teams directly. Half of their remaining games are in the division. And in doing so, being able to control whether they're able to hold down those other teams or not, and especially when you're looking at two of the teams that are ahead of them, in the Devils and the Rangers, all 4 games are still remaining in those two series.
Right, and the Flyers have played, well, the Penguins twice, the Islanders, I believe, 3 times, but everybody else, they've either haven't played yet or they've only played once.
Yep.
So,
well, we will see how it goes. It's certainly shaping up to be an interesting back half of the NHL season coming up here for the Philadelphia Flyers. And, of course, the other news that's come out over the last 24 hours when we're recording this anyway is Claude Giroux is going back to the All-Star Game. It'll be his 5th appearance in the All-Star Game, selected to the Metropolitan Division squad to represent the Flyers. And, you know, certainly, obviously, deserving. He is, you know, when you look at the All-Star selections, you know, every team is going to be represented. So you've got to have, you've got to have everybody with at least 1 player there. There's not a ton of teams that get 2 players there. Flyers were not one of them. There was a little bit of talk about that with Jake Voracek leading the league in assists. Would he get a nod? He has not. It's still early. A lot of times for these All-Star games, another team sees a player get injured or something like that, and he's replaced by somebody else. So certainly could still see another Flyer go, but the overall selection of Giroux, I think, is hard for anybody to argue with. And if the Flyers were going to get 1 representative this year, just based on overall body of work, he's probably as good as any.
I would agree. Claude Giroux certainly is very deserving, you know, and I think by any measure deserves to be there. You know, it's initially at least a tough break for, you know, Sean Couturier, for Voracek, for Shane Gostisbehere. You could even make a case for Ivan Provorov, because he plays so many tough minutes, and besides being the Flyers, you know, number 1 defense, he's also on a 40-point pace too. And that's kind of quietly going under the radar. So, you know, there are other deserving guys. As you said, there's frequently injuries, so a substitute could end up coming from the Flyers. And listen, there's always going to be deserving guys who are left off. There are always going to be debates over it. I mean, I guess that's some of the allure of the whole process. you know, I think you could certainly debate some things, you know, like Chris Letang going over, you know, some of the going over Gossis Bear or whatever. But, you know, you have those every year. It is what it is.
So we'll look forward to that. That comes up in about 2.5 weeks, the All-Star game down in Tampa, Florida. Of course, the skills competition is on Saturday night. That's the 27th. And the All-Star game itself is on the 28th, starts at 3 o'clock. And the Metropolitan Division will be trying to defend its title. They won the whole thing last year. Wayne Simmons leaving some big shoes for Claude Giroux to fill as he was named the game's MVP. So that comes up here at the end of January. Let's check in with the Lehigh Valley Phantoms now. And the Phantoms have, you know, again, been embroiled in a bit of a race of their own, having a great season, but again, battling some other teams that are also having great seasons in the American Hockey League. And one of the guys that's come along as of late for the Phantoms has been Oscar Lindblom. He was the last guy cut from camp this year, went down to the American Hockey League and did not have that great of a start. And what the reason for that was, you know, not 100% sure whether it was disappointment in not making the NHL roster or something else going on, but he didn't have a great start to the season, but certainly has come around lately for the Phantoms, I understand.
Absolutely, yeah. He's been at a point a game for, I believe, the last 11 or 12 games now, and he's been the Phantoms' best player, you know, over the last several weeks. There's been a lot of injuries in the lineup. First it was hitting the defense core, more recently it's been wreaking havoc with the forwards. He's just kept right on rolling. I think some of it may have been an element of disappointment, but I think it was also the adjustment to the North American game. Even though his style is a very North American friendly style, still it's a different game, you know. It's less distance from the boards to the net. And he's always been a responsible player without the puck, but it was just a question of, you know, getting to the scoring areas with regularity, and that's what he's been doing, and that's how he's effective. You know, if he keeps playing the way that he has been, a call up at some point is inevitable. You know, and the Flyers remain very high on him, even when he was off to a slow start. You know, if you would talk to Ron Hextall or to Chris Pryor and those guys, you know, they would say, just give it some time. He'll settle and he'll be fine. And that's what's happened. You know, and the Phantoms are back in action tomorrow. And from what I understand, it sounds like Sam Moran will be back in the lineup. So they're getting healthy in the blue line. They're still a little bit racked with injuries at forward, though.
It's really pretty remarkable how much the Phantoms have been able to stay competitive despite all the injuries that they have had. They're still right there among the top teams in the American Hockey League, and hopefully we'll be able to even improve on that once they are healthy. Of course, the other news that came out of the Phantoms camp was Terrell Goldborn coming up and making his NHL debut, and it raised eyebrows, I think, among a lot of fans that aren't used to calling up a player for any other reason other than offense. You know, when you look at Goldborn's offensive statistics, they're not going to pop out at you, but that's not why he was brought up. He was brought up as an energy player. He was brought up to perhaps maybe give a penalty kill a boost that had been struggling, and he did exactly that. The Flyers made this move after their sleepy effort against the Penguins last week, and you know that's why they called him up. They didn't call him up necessarily to score goals and ignite the offense like maybe they were looking for from Danik Martell. They called him up to do what he did, and I can't imagine there being a better result for his first shift than there was in that one when he just plowed right through a defenseman and set up the Flyers' first goal against St. Louis.
Yeah, not just any defenseman either. It was Pietrangelo.
Yep.
You know, Terrell is really – I think there's a little bit of a misconception about the kind of player that he is. He is physical. He will – you know, he'll fight from time to time. He's not a reckless player by any means. He's only taken six minutes worth of minor penalties this year. He does so, he's not spending a lot of time in the box. If he goes, he's taking somebody with him most of the time. You know, he creates a lot of power play opportunities for his team. You know, he's good on the forecheck. He's improved in a lot of subtle areas too, like protecting the puck along the walls using his feet. You know, that's been an area that the Flyers development coach have spent a lot of time working with him on. And, you know, he's emerged as a penalty killer for the Phantoms this year. So, you know, I think he earned that call up. He earned that look with the big team, and he could hardly have asked for better results in his two games.
So we'll keep an eye on the Phantoms and how they're doing here. As their All-Star break comes up at the end of January as well. They actually play their All-Star game the day after the NHL does, which will be Monday the 29th. So moving on here on this edition of Flyer Buzz with Brian Smith and Bill Meltzer. Again, we thank you very much for joining us, and hopefully you'll stay with us throughout the new year here as we get back to a regular schedule with the podcast. The World Junior Championships took place over the break as well. And I think, you hate to put this kind of expectations on a guy like Carter Hart, but I think the expectation was for him to go out there and shut the door and lead Canada to a gold medal, and wouldn't you know, he did just that.
Absolutely. You know, and going into the tournament, I think it was TSN where they anointed him Canada's best, you know, World Juniors goalie in a something like the last 15, 20 years.
I'm now, sure.
Don't put any pressure on the kid.
Sure, Ron Hextall loved that.
Yeah, but, you know, and when you're playing for Canada, it's going to come down a lot of times to the, you know, to the gold medal game and how you do in that game.
Yeah.
He was good all tournament. You know, there was maybe one goal apiece in the quarterfinals and semifinals in the third period of blowout games where he wasn't seeing any pucks that he might have liked back, but it was really meaningless to those games. He was sure tested against Sweden, though, in the gold medal game. He was tested a lot, and in that first period, Canada got outplayed, and he kept the game scoreless right there. So, you know, that was where he's going to be judged, and he had a fantastic tournament, just building on the great season he's had. He's very, you know, very exciting young goalie, and very cerebral too.
And also in the world in the junior ranks in general, not necessarily the world juniors, but Morgan Frost. Continuing to have a tremendous season, and he wasn't on the World Junior team again, mostly because that tends to be a team of older junior players. You got to be, probably really have a reason to break in there as an 18-year-old. And Morgan Frost didn't quite make it, but he certainly certainly made up for it during his time with Sault Ste. Marie, which continues to just be lights out and earned some accolades for his play over the course of December.
Yeah, he's CHL. Player of the Month, as well as OHL Player of the Month. Last night, he extended his point streak to 18 straight games, leading the Ontario League in points, in assists, in plus-minus. You know, he really deserved to go this year, but a lot of times there's preference given to guys who've played. He's a little bit of a later bloomer, so guys who played in the under-18 world for Team Canada, those tend to be the guys who might make it at 18. Listen, Claude Giroux was ignored for the World Juniors at 18. It's not any kind of a negative mark on a player. He's a shoe-in next year, but you can't ask for better. He's been averaging 2 points a game for since the end of October, and now he's playing on probably the best line in junior hockey. Boris Tkachuk is back from the World Juniors, and they just acquired Taylor Radish, who made his debut yesterday. They're all together on the line, and Frost set him up for his first goal yesterday. So that's an unbelievable team. They're a strong candidate to win the OHL championship, and very exciting things ahead for him.
And just to clarify for those of you listening who may not be up to speed on the difference between the CHL and the OHL, the CHL is the overarching everything, and I kind of liken it to in college sports in the USA, you have the Big Ten, the Big East, the Atlantic 10, ACC, all under the umbrella of the NCAA. Essentially, it's more or less the same structure. You have the OHL, the Ontario Hockey League, the Western Hockey League, Quebec Major Junior Hockey League. Those are the three leagues that operate in Canada, and they kind of operate independently, but then they all fall under the umbrella of the CHL, which is Canadian Hockey League, which isn't exactly a league. But it's that's just what they call themselves, and then so the winners of those three leagues plus a fourth host team are what form the Memorial Cup every May. That's overseen by the CHL. So that's kind of it in a nutshell for you. If you're wondering the difference between CHL Player of the Month and OHL Player of the Month, obviously OHL is just in the Ontario League, whereas CHL Player of the Month encompasses the entire junior hockey structure in Canada. So that's a big deal for Morgan Frost to earn that award. Coming up here pretty quick is Eric Lindros jersey retirement night. Number 88 will be in town on the 18th of January against the Toronto Maple Leafs. His jersey will rise to the rafters And we've been able to take some interesting trips down memory lane here at Flyers Radio 24/7 over the past few days. We went through the archives and dug out some cassette tapes, these old plastic things that you don't see around anymore, and found some of the most notable games from Eric Lindros' career, ones where we had his NHL debut already on the station, and coming up here are some other games where he was dominant, some hat trick games, some big-time playoff games, and honestly, we've got three of the five games in the New York Rangers Conference Final Series in 1997 on the docket here, which just kind of goes to show you how dominant he was in that playoff series, leading up to the Stanley Cup Final. So, it's been a neat week here, and it's going to be a neat week coming up as, the first member of the 90s Flyers sees a jersey go up to the rafters here at the Wells Fargo Center.
Eric, when Eric was healthy, there was no more dominant player in hockey. Never a more complete package of finesse and brute force, game-changing ability. Eric could do basically whatever he wanted to do a lot of nights on the ice. And the hard part is really narrowing some of these games down.
There's been a lot of conversations like this over the past 12 years, but he is a guy that I would wonder what his how much greater his impact would be today in the NHL that came along after the lockout when you can't hook guys anymore, you can't slow them down. Just watching some of the old video that we have, that was the way you stopped Eric Lindros, was to hook him, grab him, hold him, not let him get to the front of the net, all those things that you couldn't do coming out of the lockout in 2005. If he comes along, 10 years or so after he did, I got to wonder what his impact would have been on the franchise and on the NHL, how much greater he might have been.
I've wondered that myself. I think it's a mixed bag, because Eric played such a physical, on-the-edge kind of game. The other side of that being, I don't know how much of that he'd be able to play, in today's game. One of the ways that he and the Legion of Doom line changed the game was that the defense got – team's mm-hmm. defense got bigger and bigger because they couldn't, you couldn't compete with them
right.
physically. So, now you have a lot of big guys who can skate. Eric was one of the first really – almost a linebacker on skates, but he could skate too, there's a little more of an equality and balance there. But as you said, you can't hold up the forecheckers coming in, you can't hold the stick, you can't you can't cross check in front of them. It's almost impossible to clear the porch anymore.
Yeah.
So it's he would still be very much a dominant player, no question.
And then, of course, after that big event on the 18th, it'll be a great night here at the Wells Fargo Center. The Flyers alumni heading out to Hershey to take on Hershey Bears alumni. Lindros will be in that game, but over the last week we've been able to confirm that there will be a radio broadcast of that game, and we are going to have it for you right here on Flyers Radio 24/7, and it is going to involve Mr. Bill Meltzer.
Yes, and Bob Rotruck will be on play-by-play. I'm really, really looking forward to it. The alumni games are a lot of fun. A lot of it is memory lane, but also you still see that it's played at a much slower pace, but the guys who have the hands and the creativity still have those elements in their game. And part of the fun of it is the whole Legion of Doom line is going to be back intact again. Danny Briere will be there, Kimmo Tiimonen will be there, so it'll be fun.
You can more than likely find out more information about that game on the Hershey Bears website if you Google that. You never know how many more times something like that is going to happen where the whole Legion of Doom line is together, especially with one of them living in Sweden. So it's one of those things where you see a lot of people, especially the fans of these older bands like The Who and whatever, they always say if they come to town, go see them because you never know if it's going to be the last time. It's kind of the same thing to me with the Legion of Doom. You never know if how many more times you're going to have a chance to see those guys play together.
Absolutely. And I thought the days of seeing the LCB line would never end, and then the game last year was the final time,
And I don't think this alumni is going to have anybody trying to get back in the NHL like Tyler Kennedy was with the Penguins a year ago. We'll see how that goes.
But, no double shifting maybe in the third period, shortening the bench.
Somebody was looking for a job when he left that game. Yeah, that'll be a great time. And, of course, we'll have that info for you right here on Flyers Radio 24/7. That's going to do it for this edition of Flyer Buzz. We want to encourage you, if you haven't already, follow us on Twitter at Flyers Radio 24/7. That is the main place where we are able to put out ahead of time what we've got coming up on the station, and it's where we're going to be putting out what we've got coming up with these Eric Lindros games over the next few days. Some great ones are coming up, and they're really trips down memory lane, not only to hear people like Gene Hart, which we've had in a couple of these, Jim Jackson 25 years later, and same with Steve Coates, but some of these commercials. I heard a Ray Charles Right One Baby Pepsi commercial in one of these games. Just things that will take you back. in fact, Coatsy and JJ were filling time during one of these broadcasts during a delay, and the OJ trial came up, which was current events when that game was actually happening. now it's history, but it is kind of neat to relive the time and the overall context of some of these games. So again, follow us at Flyers Radio 24/7. We are also podcasting. You can find that podcast through iTunes, Google Play, however you prefer to find your podcasts. It is on the Blueberry Podcasting Network. Flyers Radio 24/7 is what you're looking for there. So that's what's going on with us this week. We'll have that alumni game for you and lots more on Flyers Radio 27. Flyers Radio 24/7. So we thank you very much for joining us here, and we hope you'll join. And don't just listen when we got games going on too, because the music mix on this station is pretty neat. Pretty much something for everybody. So if you're looking for something to fill the time at work or whatever, we've got that for you, and we'll mix Flyers updates in with that music whenever we don't have a game or something like that going on. So check it out at Flyers Radio 24/7 on Twitter. FlyersRadio247.com. is the website. For Bill Meltzer, I'm Brian Smith. Thank you very much for joining us here on this edition of Flyer Buzz, and we will talk to you soon.